All right, the marshal can open court, please.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Jessen, and Judge Smith, the Honorable James Flory presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this morning. It is June 3rd of 2021, and we have two matters on our oral calendar this morning. The first one is State of Minnesota versus Barry Ishmael McReynolds, court file A20-1435. Even though we're appearing via Zoom here today, as you know, our court rules remain the same. So you each will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It would be helpful if you're not speaking, that you mute your microphone so that we don't hear the rustling of papers and things like that. Otherwise, we're ready to proceed. So counsel for appellant, or both of you, please identify yourselves for our record since we are recording the proceedings. As you begin your arguments, and counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Stephen Russett. I represent Barry McReynolds, the appellant in this case. I'm sorry, can the court hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear for me.
Oh, okay, thank you. Mr. McReynolds is asking this court to allow him to withdraw his guilty plea on the grounds that it is not supported by a factual basis. He pled guilty to violating subdivision 1B of section 609-746, which is Minnesota's interference with privacy statute. That provision makes it a crime for someone to surreptitiously use a recording device to record events, quote, through the window or any other aperture of a house or place of dwelling of another. Mr. McReynolds admitted when he pled guilty that he used his cell phone to surreptitiously record a woman while they were in her apartment in bed naked together with the intent to invade her privacy. But his plea lacks a factual basis because he did not admit and the state did not allege that he recorded the woman through the window or any other aperture of the woman's house or dwelling.
So are you, the state's contrary do you agree? Are you arguing that the statute is ambiguous or unambiguous, Mr. Russett? I understood your briefing to be that the statutory language is unambiguous.
Our position is the statute's language is plain and unambiguous. It requires an individual to record the events through the window or other aperture of a house or place of dwelling of another. I don't see any way that can mean anything other than what it says.
So if that's the case, how do we distinguish our precedential opinion in the Morris case, which uses the same language and upheld a contrary interpretation to what you're arguing here?
Well, I would take issue with whether or not it upheld a contrary interpretation. I think of all the cases that the state cited, Morris is probably the most apt on point with regard to this issue. But I think there's a couple of points that the court needs to remember. First, Morris did not involve this specific subdivision of the statute. It involved an interpretation of a different subdivision.
Wasn't it the same language, though?
Well, the language in that statute was the aperture of a place in which the complainant had a reasonable expectation of privacy. The language here is an aperture of a house or dwelling of another person.
But that statute also dealt with an aperture of a sleeping room, not just a place.
It did, Your Honor. But the court on appeal quoted extensively from the district court's analysis of this issue. The district court concluded that aperture for purposes of that statute included the aperture of a camera. On appeal, the court indicated that the aperture requirement was met both because it involved the aperture of a camera and because it involved an intrusion in through the aperture of the place that was being protected. In that case, it was through the opening in an individual's skirt. So I would suggest to the court that to the extent that this court adopted the district court's analysis and indicated that aperture includes the aperture of a camera, that is dicta. It wasn't necessary for the court's decision in that case because the court found that the aperture included the opening in the skirt, which is consistent with the definition of aperture in the plain language of the statute. To the extent that you find Morris indistinguishable and controlling, I would suggest that Morris is simply wrong. It's wrong because it ignores the plain language of the statute, and it would render this phrase, aperture of a house or dwelling, surplusage and meaningless. It would also make it redundant.
Counsel, if I could ask you about that, and I understand your argument, but the of a house or a place of dwelling, I mean, as I read these, look at these provisions and compare them with each other and tell me if you think I'm wrong. Morris and Ulner, Perez, all the cases dealt with the provisions that had that were dealing of a place where a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, right? So the second part of it, place where the person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, was the issue in those cases. But of was in all of those provisions, of that place. I assume the way that the reason the legislature didn't add that additional language is a house or a place of dwelling has a built-in expectation of privacy. So it didn't need to be further explained. That if you're in a person's house or place of dwelling, but we still have the of issue. And so of place X and those other stages of a house, what is it that makes, does the of argument change in those? I mean, I'm not focused. I think that the noun part of it, the house or a place where there's a privacy expectation, are just analogous. The question is what of means. You're saying that it would be surplusage. I don't think it's surplusage. I think it's just a different location, but you still have the question of, and does it have to be part of the thing?
I think I agree with you, Your Honor. The different subdivisions deal with different places. And the subdivision that was being addressed in Ulmer and Morris dealt with a kind of a catch-all, any other place. The statute we're under deals specifically with intrusions into a home or dwelling. And I think we can start with the assumption that the distinction here is one that everybody has an expectation of privacy in their home. I don't disagree with that. And I also agree that the key word here is of, but I think there's also another key word, which is through. So I think both of those words have to be read together. So the recording must occur through an aperture of a house or dwelling. So I think we could go back to the recognition that this is really the old Peeping Tom statute, where somebody stands outside your house, looks through your window, and intrudes into your privacy. It's been updated to include the use of electronic cameras or whatever to accomplish the intrusion. But of, if you look up the definition, and we cite it in our brief, means pertaining to or attached to or part of. So when it says of a house or dwelling, the aperture has to be part of or belonging to the house or dwelling. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
That's why you argue that Morris just is absolutely wrong in the alternative argument that the camera's aperture is sufficient to meet the aperture.
Yes, I think it basically reads that language out of the statute, that qualifying language. It's not any aperture, it's the aperture of a house or dwelling that you have to.
What if the within a house the use of the device was through a doorway? If you're standing on the other side of the doorway, it's clearly an opening into a room.
I think there's a possibility there that would constitute an aperture. And if you're looking through the doorway, for example, into the bathroom where somebody is, you're looking through an aperture of the house. It's connected to and belongs to the house, and you're intruding into somebody's privacy. That situation arguably would be supported by a prosecution under the statute, but that's not what happened here. These two individuals were in the house, in bed, together, naked. There was no viewing that occurred through any aperture other than the aperture of the camera. And the other problem with Morris is that if you go back to the district court's reasoning, what the district court says is that the defendant was guilty because he viewed the individual with the aperture of a camera. The statute says through the aperture of a house or dwelling. It's not with. The other problem is that you're making this redundant because the statute requires that you use a recording device, which by definition has an aperture. And then it has additional language, which is you have to use that device through an aperture in the house or dwelling. If those two phrases mean the same thing, then you're rendering that meaningless surplusage and it becomes redundant. That would violate basic rules of statutory interpretation where you're required to give every word, every phrase, independent meaning in the statute.
If I may, Mr. Russett, sure. If we look at this language and say, okay, I mean, I understand you're saying it's clear, it's plain. You guys have two very different versions of this. So if we think it's ambiguous, could you address the way that the Morris court seemed to look at this too, which is say, well, then we need to look at the consequences of the particular interpretation and that the interpretation, you know, in this case would be lead to an absurd result because you'd have someone basically who was, you know, you can invade someone's privacy from one perspective, but not from a very similar perspective. Could you address that issue for us here? Because if you, I think someone could say, look, isn't it absurd that if you're in the house reporting, it's not a problem, but if you're outside the window, it is?
Well, that really comes down to a policy question and what the legislature's intent here was, which again, because our position is that this is not ambiguous, you don't get to. But assuming you get to it, I think the mistake and assumption here is that this statute reflects legislative intent to criminalize all intrusions into an individual's privacy. And I think that's just plain wrong. I think that's clear from the face of the statute. If the legislature wanted to criminalize all intrusions into an individual's privacy, it could have very easily done so in one sentence by making it a crime for any individual to surreptitiously intrude into the privacy of another person. Period. That would cover every intrusions, regardless of where, when, or how they occur. This statute, when you read it as a whole, is not that broad. It reflects a clear legislative intent and policy by the legislature to criminalize certain types of intrusions under certain circumstances.
Well, let me ask you, I'm sorry, if I may, since you're talking about legislative history and that wasn't, you know, really developed as much in this briefing, but would you agree with the legislative history as addressed in, I think it was State versus Patnuick? I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it that correctly, but it's the Minnesota Supreme Court 2019 decision. I mean, there they talk about that legislative history, how it started out by to criminalize the act of keeping.
Yeah, I actually represented Mr. Patnuick on appeal to the Supreme Court, so I'm familiar with the case. And yes, I don't necessarily disagree. I think certainly this statute was designed to protect privacy. But we have to remember in Patnuick, the issue had nothing to do with the issue that's before this court. The issue in that case is whether or not an individual had to have the intent when they entered onto the property of another person. There was no dispute in that case, and the facts make clear that individual peered through a window or aperture of a house in order to intrude, to accomplish the intrusion into privacy. So I don't disagree with the Supreme Court's review of the history of the statute, but I don't think it changes anything in this case. I still think that consistent with what the Supreme Court says in Patnuick, the policy here is not to criminalize every single intrusion under every single circumstance. If it was, we wouldn't need all these different subdivisions identifying particular circumstances, particular means of accomplish the intrusion. So I think we can agree with Patnuick's discussion of the history and still agree that this is a limited statute that applies to limited circumstances, not to every intrusion. And again, if you look at the cases, the four cases that the state relies upon, Perez, Sopko, Ulmer, and Morris, only two of those deal with the issue that we're dealing with, Ulmer and Morris. The other ones focused on whether or not the complainant had a reasonable expectation of privacy and the number of victims when a recording occurred. But all of these cases factually involved an intrusion through an aperture of the place. Perez, for example, the intrusion occurred through a hole in a wall in the bathroom. Sopko, it was through an air vent into a shower. Ulmer, it was through the opening in a partitioned urinal. And in Morris, it was an opening in the skirt. So factually, all these cases are consistent with the language of the statute that requires that the aperture be part of or connected to the place that is being intruded upon. And it's for that reason that I think that the additional statement in Morse that, well, it also includes the aperture of the camera is dicta. It's not necessary to resolve that case based upon the facts in that case. To summarize, our position is that this language is clear, unambiguous. It requires more than that you use a camera. It requires more than that you intrude into the privacy of an individual. It is limited to those situations where the intrusion occurs through a window or other aperture of an individual's house or dwelling. That's not the facts of this case. That is not what Mr. McReynolds admitted to. His plea does not have a factual basis because there is an essential element missing. And we'd ask this court to reverse the district court's decision not to allow him to withdraw that guilty plea. Thank you.
Counsel, you have a few seconds left. I just want to ask, since we're very focused on prepositions in this statute, and your argument is, the other ones that don't involve the device, the other provisions, talk about keeping in the window or other aperture as opposed to through, I noted. Is there a difference there? Does it matter to your argument? I mean, we're quite in the weeds with the meaning of prepositions, so I wondered, does that mean something?
The short answer is yes, it matters. Prepositions matter. We know that from the Supreme Court's recent decisions on statutory interpretation. Every word matters, and if a different word is used, the presumption is it has a different meaning. I'm not sure that the difference between in and through is that significant. I think if we looked up the definition of in, it would be very similar to through. I know in the Pocknook case, the individual was peering in through the window from the outside inside. So I think the key word here is through. And I don't know that what through can mean other than from the outside through the aperture to the inside. To the extent that you can look at the statute as a whole, obviously, when determining the meaning of the words, but I think in and through probably support my position, which is it's not enough just that you use a camera to record somebody. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Russett. Counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Cassandra Wolfgram, and I represent the state of Minnesota in this appeal. As stated by Mr. Russett, this case is a matter of statutory interpretation, specifically the definition of aperture of. Because Morris and Ulmer control, we ask the court to affirm the district court's findings.
Do you think the statute is ambiguous or unambiguous, Ms. Wolfgram?
It is ambiguous, Your Honor. The definite aperture is not defined within the statute at all. And window is a pretty common term that common sense tells you what it is, but aperture is not defined. And this court has held in the other cases that this is an ambiguous statute and that we should look at the other words and the meaning and the purpose of the statute behind it when we're interpreting it.
Has a court held that this statute is ambiguous or as used that as part of its reasoning?
I would go to State versus Sopko. The Court of Appeals did mention that it is an ambiguous statute in that, and that was under a different subdivision, but these are all part of the same statute. And so they can't be viewed in isolation. We have to view it in relation to the rest of the statute.
So can you speak to the argument of if within a house or dwelling, the provisions that deal with that? The argument is if simply photographing someone or videotaping them or doing the other things, broadcasting, et cetera, with the intent to intrude upon privacy in someone's dwelling, if that was it, what's the point of the language that it has to be through a window or other aperture? What's wrong with that argument that the legislature simply would have captured all of those intrusions of privacy, whether you're standing in the same room with someone or outside the door or outside the house?
So I'd go back to the legislative history on this. As Mr. Russett mentioned, this was originally a Peeping Tom statute. And so it was written this way to criminalize those who go onto the property and then are viewing somebody. And to mention that, you know, if somebody sees through a window from the sidewalk or through the street, that's not a crime. It's only when you enter onto the property. As it is developed, county attorneys in particular mentioned that a window might not cover all situations. And so they added the definition of an aperture of to note that a window is not the only way to invade privacy in these peeping statutes. And so the aperture is to develop that, that it's not just the looking, it's the fact that there is another device that you're using or a way that you're looking at the individual.
Is the, would you agree that the only possible aperture here is the cameras?
Yeah. I would agree with that, yes. And if the court does find that that's not an aperture, I would ask that this be remanded to the district court for further proceedings. So I'd like to talk about State versus Morris for a moment. Mr. Gussett mentioned that, stated that the the camera as an aperture was dicta. But when you read the case law, it does not come across as dicta. The district court specifically held that the camera was an aperture under the statute, and by using the camera to view up the victim's skirt, that it was a violation of the statute. The Court of Appeals mentioned that the camera was an aperture and the opening of the skirt was an aperture, and stated that we agree with the district court's construction of the statute. That does not make aperture of the camera dicta, that makes it a holding. And so the Court of Appeals has already ruled that a camera, in this case, it's a camera on a cell phone, is an aperture under the statute 609.746. And Judge Smith and Judge Jessen, I just wanted to mention briefly that both of you kind of went across that if we were to agree with Mr. McReynolds' interpretation of the statute, it would create kind of an absurd result. For example, in Perez, if Mr. Perez had gone into the bathroom and recorded his wife without her permission, without her knowledge, it would not be a violation. But because he went through a hole in the wall that he created, it is a violation, even though it's the same exact actions. Similarly, in Pocknook, if the defendant had gone into the house and hid under the bed and watched the children, it would not be a violation. But because of the fact he was outside the building looking in, it is. And arguably, both of those hypotheticals are a greater invasion of privacy than what actually occurred.
That's interesting in terms of how this statute could have been written in order to satisfy that meaning, which would be if you, well, it's in within there with surreptitiously, I guess, without the person's knowledge, that means. So it's simply if you videotape someone without that person's knowledge in a home or dwelling.
With the intent to invade their privacy.
With the intent to invade their privacy. So that could be whatever that means. So if it so that, what do we do with a through the window or aperture? Does that become surplusage then? If the only thing that's necessary is that it's a surreptitious taping of someone.
So the cell phone, like in this situation, is a recording device, but it's separately also the aperture. You can have a recording device that records only sound and doesn't have a lens. It doesn't have an aperture. But the cell phone has both that lens where you can record and you can see through it. And so it works as both the recording device and as an aperture.
Okay, I'm glad you raised that because I was thinking about that with the opposing counsel's argument, because this statute would not cover then audio taping someone in within their home without their knowledge.
Right, so we don't have any argument that that would cover it.
So if I may, if you think it's ambiguous, we're going back to legislative history. When this was amended to include or other the aperture comment, is there any legislative history on that you can point us to defining that would help guide us as we look at that word?
So I can't point to you to any legislative history, but I would note that, you know, Pocknook developed and discussed the legislative history in the case, and specifically that there were concerns about drilling holes and making holes that could be used for peeping in where it's not a window and you could still see into there.
But that legislative history to me just says it's all about keeping in, not being in the home. And it's about drawing those distinctions between being on the property peeking in versus on a sidewalk looking in through a window. I mean, I just, none of it seemed to deal with what we're talking about here, which is, you know, a much bigger stretch from my perspective to say a camera, the use of a camera means peeping in.
And I think that really goes into the 1992 revisions of the statute, where originally this was just one section that said it was interference for peeping into the house through a window of the house for with the purpose of interfering the privacy. But then it divided into multiple sections, and specifically they added the division where you can use a recording device, noting that it's not just looking through the window or making a hole. It's using these recording devices are an interference of privacy also.
Yes, but it seems to me, and I think this was part of Mr. Russett's point, that you're trying to use that recording device both as use any device as well as being the aperture. And, you know, as a matter of statutory construction, I struggle with how you get to do that. If you could help me.
And yeah, so it's specifically because of that the cell phone and camera are one item that you can use it. So he's holding the cell phone. He's able to, the lens is viewing it. He's getting a view through the cell phone and it's recording at the same time.
I understand that part, but that gets to the sort of typically installs or uses any device. Okay, I've got that part. That's a cell phone. But then later you're coming down to the, or any other aperture of a house. So you're trying to also use the cell phone for that purpose as well, correct?
Yes, we are.
And that is a matter of statutory construction I struggle with.
And so I would go back to Morris, where they found that the camera hidden in the bag was the aperture, and that was used to view into her, at her body.
Is it fair to say that if we either believe that that portion of Morris is dicta or that, you know, we overrule Morris, that we need to, as you suggest, reverse and remand to the district court? Because really, isn't our statutory construction argument really premised on Morris?
It is. And so if you find that the camera is not the aperture, yes, we would be asking to remand to the district court.
But it seems the argument, though, that's been made here is, I mean, there doesn't seem to be any dispute that a camera has an aperture and that the aperture in this case was used in the house. The statutory constructive language that I think we're struggling with is aperture of a house, of meaning part of a house as opposed to aperture in a house. I mean, I don't think there'd be any question here. And I think Mr. Russett might even agree with this, that if the statute read aperture in a house, then there'd be no question that the aperture of the camera would be in the house. I think what we're struggling with here, Ms. Wolf-Graham, is what's meant by aperture of a house. Seems like of means part of a house as opposed to being in a house. How do we get around that?
And so that would go directly to State versus Ulmer and the definition of aperture in State versus Ulmer. In there, the Court of Appeals said that an aperture is simply a space through which an offender obtains a view into the protected location. There was under one of the subdivisions that was a reasonable person has an expectation of privacy. Here, the protected location is the home, but the cell phone, the lens is used to view in the home and get a better view of her body. And so it's an aperture of that area.
Does it matter, apropos of that question? So a space through which an offender obtains a view into that place. And I'd actually like in rebuttal to hear from appellant's counsel too. What impact, you talk about in the brief, the possibility of zooming in with a telephoto lens. Is that at issue here? What factually in this case? And how does that argument relate? And for the appellant's counsel back on rebuttal, isn't that something that lets you obtain a view? I mean, otherwise the view is the same looking like this, but you put up a camera, might be the same view, or you might enhance and actually obtain a view that you didn't otherwise have.
So there is nothing in the record that would support that he did zoom in. He did not say either way. So I cannot tell you that he did use it that way, but it was for the purpose of recording her because she would not give him any recordings. If the court has no further questions, I'll go ahead and close out my argument. Because Morris and Ulmer control in this matter, I would ask that this court affirm the district court's findings and affirm the guilty plea. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Wolfgram. Mr. Russett, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
I'd like to make a few points. First of all, I don't read Stopko as indicating that this statute is ambiguous. The issue in Stopko, as I recall, simply had to do with how many victims you can have when you record multiple victims, how many counts you can be charged with. I don't think Stopko had even addressed the issue that we're dealing with here today or in indicated that the statute with regard to the issue we're addressing is ambiguous. Secondly, to the extent that counsel is correct, the statute does not define the words that we're discussing here of, through, aperture, but consistent with basic rules of statutory construction, all that means is you look to the ordinary everyday meaning of those words. And again, I've cited the ordinary meaning of those words in my brief, and they support this idea that the aperture has to belong to or be connected to the house or dwelling in this case, and you have to view through the aperture, meaning from the outside in to the place, into the dwelling in this particular case. The microphone issue, I guess I would disagree that a microphone is not have an aperture. A microphone has an opening. That's what catches the sound and records it. So I don't think this is distinction between a camera and an aperture. I guess I just disagree with. I think any recording device has to have an aperture in order to record sound or events. And again, the plain meaning of aperture is opening. If there's no opening on a microphone, if you put your hand over it and close the opening, you don't record anything. It's not doing this job. Policy issues. I understand the tendency to say what happened here should be criminalized. I get that, but that's not up to the court. That's up to the legislature. And there's a policy argument here that if you invite someone into your home, you relinquish certain expectations of privacy and you're on notice that there's somebody in your house, and depending on who they are, that maybe perhaps you need to take additional steps to protect your privacy than you would.
Such as not falling asleep. I'm not understanding that argument, Mr. Russett. You may be relinquishing some aspects of your expectation of privacy, but falling asleep and having someone take advantage of that by videotaping your private parts, it seems like that's a stretch.
Let me make clear, Your Honor. I'm not arguing there was no invasion of privacy here. There was. And we've admitted that all along. That's not the issue in this case. The issue is, why would the legislature require that the intrusion or the invasion be by someone looking out on the outside, looking in? That's the specific question. And there is a policy argument there that if you invite them in, that doesn't mean they're not going to intrude your privacy or that you give up all your privacy, but you're on notice. There's somebody in your house. If somebody's outside on your lawn looking through your window, you don't know that. So my only suggestion here is—
Counsel, you're not asking us to hold or to reason that this only applies when someone is outside the house.
No, I'm not, Your Honor. But again, I'm just addressing this argument that why would the legislature criminalize invasions that occur in the house, or not criminalize all invasions occurring in the house versus those that occur surreptitiously through some opening in the house. Now, whether that's a door into the bathroom door, or whether that's a window from the outside in, the legislature has a right to make that distinction. And all I'm suggesting is that there may be a rational reason that the legislature did make that distinction. Again, let's look at the statute. It does not criminalize every intrusion. It criminalizes intrusions under certain circumstances into the home by certain means, tanning booths, certain dressing rooms in retail stores, and other places where there's a reasonable expectation of privacy. So this is not a catch-all statute. That's my only point. And it should be narrowly construed, consistent with its plain language. Thank you.
Anything further? No.
If I may, Judge Flory, I just wanted, what about the idea of a telephoto lens within a house? Like if we posit a big house that has where it wouldn't be through a doorway, and you use a camera in order to obtain a view that a person wouldn't reasonably expect someone to have a view. Does that matter?
No, is the short answer, because you still have to, so you're using a recording device that has the capability of zooming in. It's a recording device. That doesn't address the question of whether you're viewing the individual surreptitiously through an opening in the house or dwelling. In that situation, if the individual was in the bathroom and you're in the bedroom and you use the telephoto lens, and strong argument could be made by the state that is violates the statute because you're looking through an opening, the doorway, into an area of the bathroom where there's an expectation of privacy. But the fact that you can zoom in with a camera or even a microphone, enhance the quality of what you can record, doesn't change the fact that that's the device. To say that satisfies this other element will make the other element meaningless and redundant. So I don't think it makes any difference, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to both of you for your arguments and briefing in the matter. The court will take the matter under advisement at this time and will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe. We stand adjourned on this matter.